Davis, Matt Vandermolen, and Sarah Crowder from Heartland Tree Alliance. They're here to talk about their free tree planting program in partnership with Bridging the Gap. We'll also hear from Mary Sowans and Jeremy Ruzick with the group One Less Pipeline. They'll talk about their efforts to connect people to their petroleum consumption, including a day of action they are hosting this weekend. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. EcoWatch.com reports, last month was the third warmest October on record, behind 2014 and 2015, and the year-to-date remains the hottest on record, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The Arctic, in particular, has witnessed a meteoric rise in October heat, and the exceptional warmth contributed to the region's record low sea ice extent for the month, which clocked in at 28.5% below the 1981 to 2010 average. Presently, the North Pole is recording temperatures 36 degrees Fahrenheit above average. One of the clearest consequences of climate change is greater surface warming in the northern hemisphere, high altitudes, including the Arctic. Rare Guadalupe fur seals are once again washing up in California's Bay Area in record numbers, likely due to unusually warm waters threatening their food supply. The East Bay Times reported that about 75 seals have been stranded around the Golden State, with even more seals that have died in the ocean. This is not the first time seals are washing up sick or dead off California's coast. Last year, about 80 Guadalupe fur seals surfaced. 42 were found dead, and only 16 of the 38 found alive survived. The unprecedented occurrence led the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to declare an unusual mortality event for the seals. The Sausalito, California-based Marine Mammal Center alone has already responded to 32 strandings this year, with some animals found dead, sick, or emaciated. Quote, to put those numbers into perspective, during our 40-year history prior to 2015, the record number of Guadalupe fur seals we have rescued in any given year was 5, end quote, the Marine Mammal Center wrote in a blog post. The largest bank in Norway, DNB, has announced that it has sold its assets in the Dakota Access Pipeline, accounting for 10% of the total funding for the project. This news follows the delivery of 120,000 signatures gathered by someofus.org to DNB by Greenpeace Norway and others, urging the bank and other financial institutions to pull finances for the project. Quote, it is great that DNB has sold its assets in the disputed pipeline, and it is a clear signal that it is important that people speak out when injustice is committed, end quote, Martin Norman, Greenpeace Norway's sustainable finance campaigner, said. He continued, quote, we now expect DNB to also terminate its loans for the project immediately, end quote. The $3.8 billion pipeline project is now entering its final stretch. More than 80% of the pipeline has already been constructed. All right, everybody, this is Natural E still here with you, and I just want to welcome Mr. Joe Davis, Mr. Matt Vandermolen, and also Miss Sarah Crowder from the Heartland Tree Alliance. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks for having us on there, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm glad you guys could make it out this evening. So the Heartland Tree Alliance, can you give us a rundown? What's the Heartland Tree Alliance?
Yeah, so we are a program of Bridging the Gap, which is an environmental nonprofit located here in KCMO. And we do several different things, from recycling to wildlands planting. And we're with the Heartland Tree Alliance. And we work to plant trees throughout KCMO to help improve our urban tree canopy.
Okay. Yeah. So you focus primarily in our urban spaces.
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. And Joe, what do you specifically do for the Heartland Tree Alliance?
So we have signed a contract with the city of KCMO to plant 500 trees throughout this next year. And so they brought me, myself, and Matt on to help lead this initiative as well as Sarah, who's our supervisor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Matt, you do the same work as Joe?
Yep. So we are – it kind of divides up into two different parts. We spend a lot of time looking for residents that are interested in our program, and then we organize the work days with educational components and looking for volunteers that are willing to plant these trees with us in these neighborhoods.
Okay, so what's up with the trees? Is this a free program for citizens?
Yes, so when we go out to the neighborhood and distribute our information with a really cool infographic that we have, they'll call us and say, yes, we would want to have a tree or more than one tree if we have no space.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll come out, and then we'll assess their property, and then if they'll be eligible, then we'll sign them up for a free tree. And during the workday, which is usually on a Saturday morning, we'll have volunteers out with free mulch, free water bags, those green water bags you see on trees that you can use to fill up the water, and also the tree itself. Mm-hmm. So this is all like a $400 value for free. And the only thing they have to do is water it for 2 years. So
okay, I just want to put our phone number out because we are taking calls. If you're listening in and you have a question for Matt, Sarah, or Joe about if you're eligible for one of these free trees, you can call us at 816-931-5534. Maybe you've already signed up and you know you're getting a tree. Maybe you can call us and just tell us how that went and maybe, you know, just encourage other people to get involved. So tell me about why would I want a tree planted? If I don't already have a tree, why do I want a tree in my front yard?
So trees offer a lot of benefits to residents, especially in an urban environment. Now, you know, there's the oxygen exchange of trees that they give us as humans, but there's also a lot of other benefits, economical benefits. We're talking about in the city, they can reduce heating and especially cooling costs in the summertime, and they save the city a lot of money in the way that they can absorb water in the watershed and save it from going into the storm drains. There's a lot of other benefits for the neighborhood and the social aspect for improving quality of life and providing wildlife habitat and increasing biodiversity in an urban environment. And they can increase real estate values if you have them on your property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, because if you're driving down the street and you got a whole bunch of new duplexes or new houses that have just been built, but there's no trees, it doesn't feel as homey there, even though it's a nice home right there, but it doesn't feel as like a community, you know?
Right. Trees, a neighborhood full of trees gets everyone out and right. Interacting with one another. So that also reduces crime as well.
Okay, so it's kind of a SEPTED, crime prevention through environmental design tactic
exactly.
As well.
True.
And it's free.
Right.
It's free.
Okay.
Completely free. No tricks, nothing.
Yeah. So if I am eligible for this tree, do I have to plant it myself?
No, we'll have volunteers. Our entire organization is really powered by volunteers, especially what we do. We can't plant these trees, just the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
So usually our planting days will be 20 to 25 trees. A few weeks ago in the scary neighborhood, we planted almost 40, and that wouldn't have been done without volunteers. So
and,
we really rely on
the Skerritt neighborhood?
Yeah,
okay.
That's in the northeast.
Okay.
So north of Independence and in between Jackson and Benton?
Okay.
Around that area, yeah.
All right, I got to give a shout out to the Ivanhoe Neighborhood Council because that's actually where I ran into Joe Davis here, and I just had to have him come in and speak to us on the air because this is such a great program for people who just can't go out to soil service and get them a new tree.
Right. Yeah, a tree would be well over $100.
Yeah.
And the labor it costs to plant it could be $200 to $300. So we're doing a huge, not really a favor, but we're doing a favor
investing
in the community.
Yeah.
For the long run.
Yes. Absolutely.
If residents are interested in helping us, we're more than happy to welcome them into the fold of volunteers. And we try to focus a lot on the educational component. So we spend about a half hour at the beginning of work days explaining what's the right way to plant a tree. There's a lot of different components of that, and we kind of touch a lot of different biology, plant biology, how trees work, what and why they're good for neighborhoods and how to do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And then connect them to other opportunities of learning opportunities through Heartland Tree Alliance and Bridging the Gap.
So what other neighborhoods have you worked with so far?
So this fall, we've chosen three neighborhoods to work in. One's the Skerritt neighborhood, which I mentioned earlier. The other is Ivanhoe, which we've spoken about a bit. Then Blue Hills is what we're working on now.
Okay, Blue Hills. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a caller. You're on the air. If you will say your first name and what part of the city you're calling from.
Hello.
Hi, caller. Will you say your first name and what part of the city you're calling from?
Stan from the east side.
Hey, Stan. How you doing?
Doing great.
Great.
I was wondering, what kind of trees are they planting? Hopefully fruit trees.
Well, are we planting any fruit trees, Joe or Matt?
Well, we're usually planting trees for cover and also beautification. So we really don't plant trees that bear fruit. So most of
edible
it's,
fruit.
Yeah, edible right. fruit at least. Yes.
That answer your question, Stan?
Okay. Is this a federal money that's paying for this, state or city money? What?
This is a city, a municipality initiative. So they are the ones underwriting this and the initiators behind this. So it's city money, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah. All right.
For the city and the urban core.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stan. All right. So tell me about this neat infographic that you brought with you, Joe. What kind of information does this have?
Oh, yeah. So this is pretty much what we use to distribute to the neighbors that we – to the residents and neighborhoods that we feel like would be eligible for a free tree. So it's pretty much basically saying, congratulations, your property has been selected by us to plant a free tree for you. And then it has a bunch of different benefits on the backside of it about everything Matt mentioned earlier about
right.
The benefits of trees.
Well, let's back up. So what are some of the qualifications for this free tree?
Okay, so we're really playing in the right-of-ways, so the area between the street and the sidewalk.
Okay.
Because that's really city property, but also resident property as well. And so let's use, and that area needs to be roughly 5 feet.
Okay.
If you have that 5 feet of space, we'll probably be able to plant a tree for you.
Okay, so if you've got 5 feet between the curb and the sidewalk.
Yes, correct.
And that's really the only qualification?
If there's no other trees in that right-of-way, if you have an open canopy, power lines we take into consideration, other utilities above ground and underground. And, of course, the residents' willingness to take care of the tree, too. That's the big part of it. We ask that they sign a pledge saying that they'd nurture it and care for it. That's primarily watering it for the next 2 years.
Wow. It's a long time.
It's a big component of our program. There's other cities in the U.S. that have had million tree campaigns, and they've struggled in the part of tree maintenance. After it's in the ground, after it's brought from the nursery to the urban environment and planted successfully, it's hard to maintain that tree over the course of time necessary to get it established.
So has this program done anything to help, you know, prevent that issue that we've seen in other cities?
So we're really just getting started, but when we plant the trees, we also educate the resident who's applying for the tree and who gets the tree as well. So they'll see our infographic, and we'll be able to contact them with if they have any questions about what's going on with the tree, how should they water it, how often they should water it.
What other care is necessary, like tree trimming in the future?
Yeah, pruning and things like that, yes.
Offer a lot of educational resources to anybody that's looking for more knowledge or training in tree keeping.
Okay, so are you aware of any services that are available? Perhaps if one of your participants for the free tree program is someone who is elderly or who is disabled, do you know of any programs that offer tree care or stuff to help out those people? Put you on the spot.
I'm not really aware of that.
That's all right.
But I'm sure, you know.
But now that I've asked you, you might find out.
Right, right. But they can give us a call anytime, and we'll see what we can do. We're really flexible and really want to help anyone who's willing to take care of a tree,
right.
Whether we plant it or they plant it.
You want to help them be successful.
Correct.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, and as Joe mentioned, I think that this is a really, a big community activity. So if we came across an elderly or someone disabled that wanted a tree, I think that the community aspect of it, our volunteers would help get that tree planted, as well as we had sort of thrown around the idea of having a neighbor adopt the tree. So we haven't run across that yet. We've only planted about 105 of our 500 goal.
Wow.
So we've got a lot to go, but we're absolutely, we're open to all kinds of ideas.
Cool. So you said 105 of 500. Okay, so that is quite a lot. Now, there's a lot of neighborhoods in Kansas City, and you named Blue Hills, Ivanhoe, and Escarret.
Mm-hmm.
So you still got Palestine, you got Oak Park, you got Marlboro. I mean, what else?
There's dozens.
Yeah, we got, I'm feeling bad. I got to look up the HENC, the Historic Eastern Neighborhood Coalition. There's a whole bunch of neighborhoods. So if you live in a neighborhood and you don't have any trees in your right-of-way, which is the space between the curb and the sidewalk, which has at least 5 feet, give us a call, 816-931-5500. 5534. We would love to get you to be a part of this program and get and add property value, add some canopy and shade, lower your heating and cooling costs. What are some of the other benefits of a free tree, Matt? What were some of those other benefits that you named?
Increasing quality of life.
There you go.
Stormwater capture.
Okay. What's important about stormwater capture?
So we end up losing a lot of water through our... The city is asphalt and mm-hmm. cement, and there's a lot of impervious surfaces, right? So when that rainwater falls mm-hmm. on those impervious surfaces, they go into like directly into the watershed or the riverway through mm-hmm. our stormwater system, mm-hmm. right? So the better it is for the city and for nature mm-hmm. if those droplets of water that fall in every square inch are retained right. in the soil so that it's accessible to plants and even to humans as groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
And it slows the way that the water moves through the watershed and the microclimate.
So it kind of performs, like, that's why we build rain gardens, so the water doesn't just take all the oil and all the toxic chemicals just straight off of our pavement and just go right into our water sources for our fish and for us to drink. It goes back into the system of life.
Yeah, trees are pretty much natural filters. You can
right.
look at it that way. Yeah.
And go ahead.
Speaking of climate change, mm-hmm. Trees are great agents of carbon sequestration, mm-hmm. right?
So sequestration.
They take on carbon through carbon dioxide, the gas, and fuse it to their tissue, and that's their growing medium. And also they help a lot in reducing air pollution. They mm-hmm. can take those fine particulates that are emitted by cars or factories. Wow. Manufacturing and can absorb that on their tissues or through their respiration system.
Okay. Their respiration. See, I would learn all kinds of things if I sign up for this tree, huh? Just in 30 minutes. What are some of the topics that you cover in the 30-minute breakdown before the volunteers actually start digging?
Okay, so it's a lot of information, but we focus on the proper planting techniques. Right, Joe?
Right, right. We also talk about safety first, because when you're digging a tree, you want to make sure you call the utilities out first, so you know where exactly where you're playing on top of. So AT&T, you know, the cable, the water, the gas, you want to make sure you know where all that is before you plant. But when we first plant, we want to plant a hole twice the diameter of the actual root ball of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And then plant it at the right depth. That's one of the biggest mistakes that happens when you plant a tree. You want to plant it right where those primary lateral roots come out, or the root flare.
What types of, does a different type of tree require a different type of, a different amount of depth, or do all trees pretty much need to be at a certain level?
At that root flare, but when you get a tree from the nursery,
uh-huh.
It comes in a lot of different shapes and forms in the root ball. You know, when you take it out of the container,
I've actually never seen one, so.
Or like kind of like if you're transplanting a tomato, you know, into your garden.
Okay.
You take it out of the mold and you see all those roots. It's
sure.
kind of the same with the tree. So
yeah.
Each one has a different characteristic when it comes out of that. And you might have to do different management techniques to clear up the roots a little bit so they can go right in the soil next spring or this fall if it still stays warm to look for those nutrients.
Right.
But pretty much, yeah, every species will plant the same depth for that root flare.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how long is this planting season for these trees?
So our next planting will be on December 3rd, and we're probably going to have another planting right after that, the week after, since we're having pretty good weather so
right.
far. So we can plant pretty well into almost the winter, pretty much. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? So like 5 years ago, when would you have to stop planting trees?
Like 2 weeks ago, probably.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild? Okay, so how are you finding participants? Not the volunteers, but the participants.
So Matt and I just physically go out to the neighborhood and just walk it. We'll walk it for several hours distributing our infographics.
Go to community meetings.
Community meetings. Yeah.
Right. We're really proactive in how we get our residents on board for this.
And we want it to be more long-term, too. We'd mm-hmm. like to see residents be interested in our program even after 2 years is up, after mm-hmm. they've completed their they're part of the pledge to continue to look for information and training and to be a part of this kind of this tree keeper community that's always getting better and better at taking care of trees and improving our urban forest landscape.
So how would someone who has no experience maintain that this new relationship as a tree keeper? You know, do you have, like, do you think you'll have a community group or maybe like a Facebook page to keep people in touch with each other? Or how do you envision that tree keeping community?
There's already an excellent tree keeper course.
Okay.
So that's about a week long, or 27 hours, is it? 24 hours. And that's a great, gives you a great basic education on soils, tree ID, how to plant a tree correctly, and how to maintain it in the pruning and the training and other aspects of tree maintenance.
All right, caller, you are on the air. Please tell us your first name and what part of the city you're calling from.
Blind guy from Midtown.
Hey, blind guy.
Listen, I was in the greenhouse tree business for a long time before I lost my eyesight to an anesthetist at KU, and they're lucky I'm very forgiving. But one thing I'd always do for people when I planted trees, I gave them a nice steel rod bent for a handle, and I would tell them, now in the backfilled area, when you go to check the watering, plunge it in and pull it out. If it comes out totally clean, the tree needs water. Now, if it comes out a little bit of dirty and the moisture on it, it's got plenty of moisture. And then another thing I would do for people that they might have had trees out and beyond, and, you know, they had one spigot and they had limited time, like a couple 5-gallon buckets per tree with a small hole drilled in it, fill it, and then the water percolates slowly and doesn't run off, and you give a good watering to the tree, and you control the amount of gallons, you know, to do it. So sometimes you would do, like, a bucket on one side and the bucket on the other. Then when it was empty, you moved it, like, maybe you had it from east to west and then north to south. So you put 20 gallons on that tree, and then you could take your rod and check it and see how you're doing. But a lot of times some things, you know, if you tell people to water every week or every 2 weeks, but it's rained for 10 days, they'll be out there watering. So, you know, it's a good way to control and conserve your water and have a healthy tree. And more trees are killed by planting them too low. It's nice to be a little bit above ground level and slope it away so you don't suffocate the roots with the backfill and that.
All right. Excellent advice. Thank you, blind guy.
Awesome. Hey, peace out.
All right. I love that.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, good to hear that other people in the city are really knowledgeable in planting trees. So,
do you think maybe you'll pass on that idea with, what was it? Was it a steel rod, he said?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's kind of like
rod.
Checking your oil.
That's exactly what it is.
Not as environmentally friendly, but.
I think that's an excellent rule of thumb and a good way to verify what the soil moisture is like when you go out to water. So instead of, if it's nice and moist, then you don't have to waste that water in planting a tree. But if it's dry, even though it's been raining, then you know you got to add more water. It's great.
That is excellent.
Blind
I like
guy.
That.
Thanks.
All right. Well, again, if you'd like to call in and you got a question or maybe a comment or maybe some good advice, you got our number at 816-931-5534. We have planted 105 trees, and we still have 500. We got 500 total. And we've planted 105. So please contact Heartland Tree Alliance through Bridging the Gap. Do you have a website where they can get you on?
Yeah, so you can contact us at heartlandtreealliance.org. And we have all our information we spoke about here on there. So, yeah.
All right. And what is the next neighborhood community meeting that you plan on attending? So people can be on the lookout.
Right now, we're not sure yet. Right now, we're trying to finish up Blue Hills.
All right.
After
that,
it's up for grabs pretty much.
It's to be discerned. It depends on who is most interested, really, and also our priority for canopy cover and the city's priority to select these three neighborhoods at first was based on their organization and the need for trees in their neighborhood. And we encourage that neighbors get together. We need at least 20 people or 20 tree locations,
right?
20 to 30, before we can make it cost-effective for us to go into a neighborhood and plant trees.
Okay. All right, Boston Heights, Mount Hope, you been there?
We have not.
Okay, where are you at? East 23rd Street, PAC, you been there? Okay. What about the Key Coalition? You've been to the Homeowners Association meetings yet?
No, we haven't.
Okay.
There's a lot we haven't done yet. We really only started this a couple months ago.
I'm just trying to get the shout out to
right,
from the community
right,
and let you
yeah.
know, because once they're done in Blue Hills, you could be the next community.
Exactly.
We got Oak Park. I know that they're out there. Palestine. They got Santa Fe. Seven Oaks. Is this your neighborhood? Do you want trees? Some free trees in your right-of-way? Is that how you say it?
Right-of-way. Yeah.
Right-of-way. Mm-hmm. We got South Roundtop, Vineyard, Washington, Wheatley. Where are you at? Where are you guys at? We got Wendell Phillips Neighborhood Association. And if I haven't mentioned your neighborhood, as you would like a tree, you can call in 816-931-5534, and we can get you information about how to get them to be coming to your neighborhood next. Blue Hills is... That's like Paseo to
Prospect.
Prospect.
North of 63rd.
63rd to mm-hmm. what? 55th?
50th.
50th, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. So they're at Blue Hills right now. And so you could be next. Now, do you just, you said you just go door to door to
yeah.
try to talk to people. Have you made contact with people, or is it mostly nobody's answering? Or tell me about some of the conversations maybe that were interesting to you that you've had with some residents.
The conversations that have come up, specifically in Ivanhoe, where residents, the whole streets, they had trees before about 10 years ago or several years ago, but the city came in and just cut all the trees down and put new sidewalks in.
Okay.
And the residents weren't really happy with that. They really missed their trees.
Right.
And so we replanted those trees for them, and they're really pleased. So now they have brand new sidewalks and brand new trees.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. So if someone wants to see your work before they commit, what part of Ivanhoe is it? They could go drive through or look at it. Or they could go to Ivanhoe Neighborhood Council at 37th and Woodland, talk to people. But where are some of these trees that you have planted?
Yeah, well, we have planted two trees right outside 3700 Woodland. So,
okay.
Otherwise, Olive is a great street.
Yes.
What is it? We planted about 11 trees in one block.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I think
good.
It's about the 3700 block.
Did you plant? Were you able to get trees at the new development on 39th? Those new kind of townhouses.
Not, we were not, because those right-of-ways are really skinny.
Oh,
they're
man.
About like 2 feet.
Oh, that's not helpful.
Yeah. So if there's any engineers out there, be conscious of how big you want the right-of-ways.
Right.
A lot of concrete is not the best.
Right.
Right.
So. So, engineers, please, at least 5 feet, so we can get trees, right?
Exactly, yes.
That's right. I get really excited talking to residents who are also excited about the program. It's a lot of fun, and it gives us a lot of energy to see people enthusiastic about learning more about trees and being part of the tree planting process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so can you give me a specific example? I love hearing about people, so can you think of a specific example where someone maybe didn't know anything about trees and you and your conversation really enlightened them, or maybe you were surprised by how much they did know?
Yep. Emilio is one name I'll throw out there from Ivanhoe. He lives on Flora mm-hmm. Avenue. And he was very excited about the trees. He had a great garden in his front yard, but in his right-of-way was empty. It was lacking trees. And it's an opportunity to start a friendship,
mm-hmm.
really, the way that we have the opportunity through the nonprofit that we work with and the way that this program is structured. We can empower people to learn about the benefits of trees and other native plants, you know, the environmental world of putting the green back in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really exciting. So he was really excited about the trees, and we've continued to talk about other ways that we can improve the neighborhood and the city.
That's neat. So tell me again, you said December 3rd is the next planting session?
Yes. And we usually plant from 9 a.m. to noon. So it's just 2-3 hours they'll be out there. And we'll divide it into groups. So each group will have like three or four people, and that group will plant about 3 or 4 trees each.
Can people just show up to this event if they want to volunteer, or do they need to get on the website first, or how does that go?
They can do both. So we'll take stragglers, we'll take people who volunteer online. So yeah, anyone who wants to be involved can just contact us or just show up.
And where should they show up to if they're going to come help volunteer?
They're going to show up at the Blue Hills Community Service Building.
Okay. All right. Well, Matt, Joe, Sarah, thank you so much from the Heartland Tree Alliance for being here with us tonight. And if you want a tree, get on heartlandtreealliance.org and see how you can get your free tree to improve your neighborhood value, your value, property values, and just overall community look and watershed, and on and on and on. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
Thank
Aaron.
You.
On the next Radioactive Magazine, Radioactive Magazine host Sharon Gibson interviews Judy Sherry of Grandparents Against Gun Violence. And also,
are you looking at a lifetime of debt slavery to pay off your college education? Tune in this week to the Heartland Labor Forum as economist Hossein Bamahi and researcher Allison Fredrickson explore the explosion of student debt and its implications for millennials. Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
On the next Radioactive Magazine, Radioactive host Marvita Oliver presents Episode 7 in her in-depth look at how local activists are working to revitalize the homes and neighborhoods in urban Kansas City. Marvita's guests are Callan Muhammad and his son, Mujahid Muhammad. Callan Muhammad is an organizing member of the Kansas City Local Organizing Committee and Conflict Resolution Coordinator of 10,000 Fearless, an organization that organizes and engages neighborhood revitalization. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesday, 6 p.m.
Freshwater streams could contribute to climate change on this CurrentCast. When it comes to greenhouse gas emissions, human activities are the largest source of methane. But there are also natural culprits, and new research suggests they include streams. Methane is a byproduct of bacteria that live in river sediments. According to John Crawford of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the gas dissolves in water and is emitted via bubbles.
All you need is something like a stick or your foot, and you can stir up these sediments and see these bubbles just erupting from the stream beds.
Crawford says even if streams are not a large source of methane, they should still be included in climate models.
It's going to be really hard, if not impossible, to get a model that's running properly unless you know all the components.
CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
The deepest power of the human soul is imagination. And when humans bring imagination to the situation, we join the agents of creation. It's always been that way, and it's trying to be that way again.
Storyteller Michael Mead says we all need to become agents in the co-creation of culture and nature. This week on Bioneers Radio.
Friday morning at 9:30, right before Eclectics.
The need for firewood is extremely urgent right now in Standing Rock, and Kansas City can help. A semi is leaving Kansas City on November 27th for Standing Rock, and all they need is the firewood to fill it. If you would like to donate, please contact Mickey at 913-562-4810. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And here we are back in studio with Eco Radio KC here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is your pal Mike Murphy, and I'm going to turn it back over to Natural E in just a minute. But I did want to give this one preliminary report, and as well as we'll try and give out that phone number for the firewood towards the end of the program. The firewood going up to North Dakota this weekend. There's a semi going up, and they're looking for donations of firewood. We'll hear more about that at the end, but we do have an account from yesterday from actually an Eco Radio listener. This is Vicki Kepling, some might know her as Super Hooper. She went up yesterday afternoon and checked in to her hotel and went to the casino, and then she heard about an action on the bridge. And she says, as I walked out of the hotel, I ran into Dee Snider. I'm assuming that's Twisted Sister's Dee Snider. I said hello, told him I heard there he was here, and asked if he wanted to come to this action. No, but I have a crew down there right now, he answered. He thanked us for his information as we headed out of the casino. The bridge where the conflict was occurring was just north of the main camp on Highway 1806. People had parked on the side of the road. I found a spot and pulled in. I walked towards the bridge. There were three areas on top of the bridge and the two sides leading down to the Missouri River. I stayed on top of the bridge. It was 26 degrees, and the folks on the grass were slipping. The scene was intense. The law enforcement officials had military machinery and bright lights emitted from the vehicles made it difficult to make out details. Water protectors covered the bridge. Some were close to the equipment and some stayed back. A group of elders drummed and sang, and some had a small fire burning on the bridge for protectors who were cold. And one native held a megaphone and addressed the officers. "Shame on you," the crowd chanted. "Me wikoni. Water is life." It was freezing, and I danced to the drums to keep my feet warm. My friend brought me hard hand warmers. I just met this man, and I was grateful that he was doing what he could to help me. And I took pictures. That's what I do. I didn't have my camera, but I used the heck out of my phone. And while I didn't get to the front of the front line on the bridge, I was right behind the front line. The law enforcers shot tear gas to the side of the bridge, and the gas encompassed the bridge. It was very hard to breathe, and I made myself breathe through the filter. My eyes were burning, and I kept them open just enough to see them moving towards the back of the bridge. Medics were organized and had rinse for those who needed help. The law enforcers, taxpayer-funded, I might add, shot freezing water and rubber bullets towards the water protectors. It was brutal to watch. When someone was hit with a rubber bullet, other protectors helped the victims get to safety. The water sprayed at the water protectors turned to ice, and I'm sure many experienced hypothermia. Concussion grenades were thrown by the law enforcers into the crowd on the bridge. One felt as if it went off about 10 feet behind me. My ears rang. I stayed for hours, and my feet began to numb. My phone ran out of juice, and we went to my van to warm up. As we exited, more people were going in. We knew our friend would be worried, so we headed back to the hotel where we heard that one of our fellow Springfield riders was hit with rubber bullets and taken to the medic. I went to the bridge not knowing what to expect. It felt like war. I've been involved in many protests, but I've never felt the calling to take activism to this level before. This issue is different to me and others. I honestly believe that our country is at a pentacle of change, and this is our time to stand up for humankind over corporations. The little voice inside my head reminds me it's always time, but Standing Rock is an important event in our lifetime. Thanks to all who have battled and who support the battle and who will battle for natural resources in the future. And that's, again, Vicki Kepling, a.k.a. Super Hooper, and she told that to MissouriNetwork.tv. And I'm going to turn it back over to you, naturally.
Thanks, Mike. And, you know, thank you for kicking off this portion of our show with that reading. This is such a serious issue on so many levels. The police brutality, the police force protecting corporate interests, and then, of course, water, which is something that everyone needs to survive. I'd like to welcome our guests to the show, Mary Sowance and Jeremy Ruzick. They're with the group One Less Pipeline. And actually, it is these issues going on in North Dakota surrounding the Dakota Access Pipeline is what this One Less Pipeline group came out of. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, Aaron. The idea came up at, well, for me, attending rallies and signing petitions and then realizing that it was my petroleum consumption that was causing the pipelines to be built. Mm-hmm. So we came up with the idea of one less tank, one less pipeline. It doesn't matter if I'm protesting, if I'm attending rallies, if I continue to consume petroleum. So that was kind of how this idea started for us.
Okay. So how long has this group been formed?
Well, so we actually started this fall.
Good.
We had both attended a rally in September, I think, on the Missouri River, and I was just struck by how I'd gotten there. So I drove my car, even though it was a car full of folks. Everybody else, I think, maybe 90% of the people had driven their cars there from all over Kansas City, and it occurred to me, like, yeah, the petroleum companies know that we are completely dependent, addicted to their product.
Right.
And so no matter how much I find this to be morally offensive and wrong, and I understand water is life, if I continue to engage their product, mm-hmm. doesn't matter what I believe.
Now, Mary, let's not get confused. You have been involved with green events, green activities, green activism, your whole life, right?
Once you learn something, you can't unlearn it, right? So once I started paying attention to these things maybe 15, 20 years ago, it's mm-hmm. like, oh, we got to change what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense, yeah.
And I first met you through your involvement with GreenWorks.
That's right, yeah. I'm the program director for GreenWorks. But this is completely distinct from that.
I'm just saying, you just said this group started in the fall, but you've been involved in community activism as it relates with social justice and environment.
That's right,
for at least 15, 20 years. And Jeremy, tell me a little bit about yourself, how you got involved with this, what's your background?
I've known Mary since high school, and since I was in high school, when she was a teacher of mine. But I've also been involved in kind of environmental and social justice issues for a long time. And for me, Standing Rock is kind of a great example of how there's no division between different issues of social justice, environmental issues. It's all related. It's all connected. And so this effort is kind of just a culmination of all those different passions of mine coming together. And that's just how I would describe myself. I'm just a very concerned citizen wanting to do something.
Right. Now, I wanted to talk to you about how this came about when you were talking about driving to the rally against petroleum use. I mean, it causes a split within us. We want to be active and we want to be engaged, yet we find ourselves driving to these rallies that are against it, and it's kind of mind-boggling. It's like I'm confused. I'm trying to be positive, and at the same time, I'm part of the problem. How does this work?
I know. It's crazy-making. So I took my kids to the rally, and they were really into it, and they were moved by the speeches and all that. But then afterwards, we went to City Market mm-hmm. and then bought a whole bunch of stuff that was encased in plastic, and I was like, what the heck? There is just such a disconnect between what I believe and what I affirm and what I know to be right.
Right.
And yet I exist in systems that are doing wrong.
Right.
And so what do we do about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what'd you come up with?
I'm working on it.
For me, at least as I see it, there's two parts, there's two aspects. And first of all, I try to be trying to make those little sacrifices or changes in my own lifestyle that'll make a difference. You know, I try to ride my bike instead of my car, or purchase less plastics, and those things where I know I need to make changes in my lifestyle. But also, the other half of the picture is that we have to hold accountable the business community and the civic organizations to be accountable for investing in alternatives, alternative energies, mm-hmm. and just alternative systems for us. We can't just do it all by ourselves individually.
Go ahead, Mary.
So the average person consumes 2.5 gallons of petroleum a day, 2.5 in America, and there are 330 million Americans.
Is that just gasoline, or are you talking about our plastic intake and
everything?
All that?
2.5 gallons a day.
Right.
So our need for pipelines to be built is market driven.
Mm.
So how do we switch
now
that around?
Thinking.
Right? How do we switch that around? How do we decide that we do not want this? So how can the market bear us something different? So that's where this idea came from. So like Jeremy said, there's the personal action, but then we have to how can we change systems as well?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it always starts with the personal. So that's where this idea, one less tank, one less pipeline, started from. So what we're asking, should I get to that?
Please.
So what we're asking is that for over Thanksgiving weekend, do not fill up your gasoline tank. So do not fill up your car. Boycott gasoline for the weekend. And then tally that. We have a Facebook page called One Less Pipeline. Just indicate that you've done that, that you've committed to that. So part of it is that filling up your gas tank is a sort of an unconscious action. It's
mm-hmm.
something we do. It's routine. It's something that is necessary for us to tool around in our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's bring consciousness to that. Let's decide that we're not going to for a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just step one. Then you invite your friends to do it. Then they invite their friends and so on and so on. And then we just aggregate that number. It seems like a passive thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not enough for me to decry the violence that's happening at North Dakota with my Facebook posts and with my angry little emoji face, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how can I put action to my solidarity? This is step one. Those pipelines are going to continue to be built. This sort of brutality is going to continue to happen because all of us are dependent on fuel. So how do we disconnect our transportation from petroleum?
Right.
So over Thanksgiving weekend, don't fill up your tank. Post it on One Less Pipeline. Tell your friends. Encourage them to do that. Mm-hmm. And let's see what that number bears out. That's step one. And then if you continue to follow us on Facebook, we're going to give more information on what you can do. Ultimately, like I said, we want to disconnect petroleum use from transportation. So if we can bring consciousness to this weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, for God's sake, you know, let's see where that takes us.
One Less Pipeline, if I type that in on Facebook, that's how I'll find you?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I kind of wanted to touch on the addiction piece. You said, you know, it's something we're addicted to. And I find that to be the proper usage of the word addiction. You know, we think about addiction when it comes to food, drugs, alcohol, all kinds of things. But I really do believe that we are addicted to petroleum, because when someone is addicted to something, they continue to do it despite of the negative consequences that come with it.
That's
and
right.
That is us. That's right. We are continuing to drive, continuing to buy plastic, you know, continuing to do these things even though we know that it is harming us.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
That's, you know, so this is a big issue, but I do appreciate what you guys are asking us to do, just to bring some consciousness around something that is mindless for us. Now, when you're asking us not to fill up, I did think, well, what if people are just going to fill up the Thursday before or the Monday after? You know, what if they'll just see a spike in their sales the day before or the day after of the weekend that we pledge to not fill up?
Right. So we've talked about we mentioned this in the Facebook event things. We have no delusions of grandeur here that we're going to change. We're going to, you know, make oil industry realize the error of their ways, and
right.
And you know, this is gonna solve the problem. This is like what Mary's describing, that this is just to bring consciousness to those who maybe are not aware of this,
mm-hmm.
or we all need a little, you know, push
right.
in that direction. So this is just one step to in our greater lifestyles after Thanksgiving, like
right.
continue on.
We're gonna take one short break, Mary. Hold that thought, and we'll get right back.
Holding.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. People often assume that protecting the climate requires an economic sacrifice. But the state of California is proving that switching to clean energy can grow the economy. A recent study from the University of California, Berkeley, found that California's investment in clean energy projects has generated thousands of jobs for mostly blue-collar workers.
But it's not just about jobs, it's about what kind of jobs the green economy is creating.
That's Bentany Jones, a co-author of the study. She says California's renewable energy industry created high-quality jobs. Many of them provide middle-class wages, benefits, pension plans, and are union-protected. And because renewable energy production is typically located in rural regions, which tend to have high unemployment, many of the jobs were in some of the state's poorest areas. Jones says that specific policies laid the groundwork for this surge of job creation. For example, California requires that a large portion of its clean energy come from facilities built in-state.
The way that you design policy can lead to the creation of good jobs.
In other words, given the right legislation, what worked in California could work elsewhere. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Go ahead and finish your thought, Mary, about if there's going to be a spike before and after.
Well, so the interesting about that is that if there is a spike before or after, that just underscores our addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even as we're trying to do a good thing in this system, it's not going to hit their bottom line. However, like Jeremy said, it's about bringing consciousness to an unconscious act that we do.
Right. So this is more about us than it is about them. More
for
about,
now.
Right. Right. Well, right. Yeah. This is step one. So getting our minds wrapped around the predicament that we're in. Mm-hmm. I do want to mention that their Facebook page is One Less Pipeline. Go on Facebook and just type in One Less Pipeline and let them know that you are pledging to not fill up your tank for the weekend after Thanksgiving. Are you talking about Thursday through Sunday? What are you guys saying?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay, mm-hmm. Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
You can also use the hashtag One Less Pipeline.
Okay, there you go. Hashtag One Less Pipeline. Also, please check out our Eco Radio Facebook page because I posted a whole bunch of links about the petroleum boycott event. A link to One Less Pipeline's Facebook page, a link to help the water protectors in the winter, and also a link to the governmental entities sending military to Standing Rock. So you can go through us, Eco Radio KC on Facebook, or you can go through One Less Pipeline on Facebook. And then so please stay in touch with us, Eco Radio KC on Facebook, One Less Pipeline, and don't fill up your tank Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of this weekend, and let's start to bring some consciousness around this mindless act that is doing us in, you know, in many ways. So, Mary, Jeremy, thank you so much for being with us here tonight.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you,
Aaron.
Keep us posted.
We will. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Again, this is Natural E, and I've got your events. So the need for firewood is extremely urgent right now in Standing Rock, and Kansas City can help. We have a 53-foot semi-trailer truck and driver for a trip to Standing Rock, and all we need is the firewood to fill it with. The truck will leave Kansas City on November 27th. Firewood must be cut and seasoned. No green wood, please. So this will be Saturday. You can come from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Batliner Paper Stock Company Waste, which is 2501 East Front Street. And I'm going to ask Mike to look up that number if he wants to play it again, or maybe he'll play it on the spot. If you listen to this radio station, we'll play that spot repeatedly. And then also, Buy Nothing Day is the Friday after Thanksgiving, so this kind of pairs with One Less Pipelines event. Friday, the 25th of November, so for more than 22 years, Adbusters have admonished us to consume less through Buy Nothing Day for the sake of our ecological life support base, our fiscal solvency, our community health, and the hole in our soul that we try to fill with stuff. Adbusters advocate that on Black Friday, the 25th of November, quote-unquote Black Friday, we stop buying for 24 hours, so don't buy anything. Be in solidarity with Adbusters and all of us to not buy anything on Friday, the 25th. And then be in solidarity with One Less Pipeline, and don't fill up your gas tank with Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and let us know with hashtag One Less Pipeline. And that is all I have for the events today.
The need for firewood is extremely urgent right now in Standing Rock, and Kansas City can help. A semi is leaving Kansas City on November 27th for Standing Rock, and all they need is the firewood to fill it. If you would like to donate, please contact Mickey at 913-562-4810. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's a warm summer afternoon in Denver, and people are beating the heat by heading down to the South Platte River. It's the waterway that bisects the city on its journey from the Rocky Mountains to the Great Plains.
Today is the fourth annual South Platte River Fest, and activities range from kayaking the rapids to stand-up paddleboarding to just wading in the river's shallow, sandy bottom to cool off. Nothing says summer fun like being by the water on such a hot day.
Maybe this June, but not the one back in 1965.
Probably few playing in the river today would know that just over 50 years ago, this place was the scene of epic devastation. In 1965, a monster storm turned the normally placid South Platte River into a killing machine.
The metro area received 14 inches of rain in just 3 hours, and that sent a 20-foot wall of water carrying propane tanks, cars, tires, telephone poles, livestock, entire mobile homes, just about anything it could scoop up in its path to carve destruction and chaos.
You know, if it was in the way, it went down. There was just no stopping it.
That's Roger Dudley. He was 18 at the time of the flood and had just graduated from Denver's West High School.
That night, I remember getting up on top of my house. We could hear the announcements as they drove around, making warnings to people that were in the flood zone down below our house. Well, I got up on top of the roof to look around better, and I saw huge sections of Denver going black.
That's because power plants were situated right along the river.
So all three of the Denver metropolitan power plants were inundated with water, and they shut off the power to save the plants. We didn't lose power at our house. Other areas did, and were out for several days.
When the skies finally did clear, 21 people were dead, 1,700 buildings damaged or destroyed, 16 bridges gone, and many streets impassable. Over time, the river slowly retreated to its banks and to being invisible.
That's because before the flood, the South Platte was a cesspool lined by factories and junkyards. It was ignored, neglected, and abused.
It's almost as if in June of 1965, the river said enough is enough and let loose a fury no one could have imagined.
But it didn't only upend structures. It rearranged how Denver city officials thought about the Platte. One politician in particular was very moved by the disaster. Enter Joe Shoemaker.
My dad was in the state senate at the time.
That's Jeff Shoemaker, Joe's son.
The quick history is that he was manager of public works for Denver in the late 50s and early 60s. And like the managers before him and before him, anything you had that you didn't know what to do with in terms of torn up this or dumpy this or lousy this, you just brought it down to the banks of the river and threw it in because the river was already dead and polluted and rotten. So what's one more load of concrete or one more ton of dirt?
In fact, the river was so ignored, many didn't even know or even care that the South Platte ran through the city.
I come from Iowa farm stock, and we were back in northwest Iowa on the farm. My father, as a state senator, got a call from the governor's office saying, as a Denver legislator, you need to get back here. And my dad came out and said, the river's flooded. I got to get on a plane and get home. And my quote to my dad was, what river?
Back in those days, only poor people had houses near the Platte.
Who else who had money would live near a polluted stream of poo? The point is, in 50 years, it is a complete 180-degree change.
That started with his dad. As a state senator, he led several initiatives, the first of which was to find funding to build Chatfield Dam as a bulwark against future floods.
In 1969, my father carried the legislation and created the Urban Drainage and Flood Control District, and its focus is to make sure that the river is safe and is able to carry water as well and as safely as it can.
But even as the South Platte was on its way to being tamed, it was still ecologically dead. It was said you could hear the flow, but not see the water through all the trash. More than just containing the river was needed.
In 1974, he met with the mayor at the time, Bill McNichols, and together, Democrat mayor and Republican senator co-formed the precursor of the Greenway Foundation called the Platte River Development Committee, and 9 volunteers, absolutely no authority of any kind whatsoever, just a group of volunteers that got some seed money from the city and said, let's go start to save a river.
The very first project they built was Confluence Park, which is where we're standing now. It's the site of the birthplace of the city of Denver, and
42 years ago, the single most polluted place on the river because it was the combination of Cherry Creek and the South Platte.
The Greenway Foundation, now under Jeff's leadership, has helped to construct numerous trails, parks, and ecosystem restoration projects that have vastly improved the health of the South Platte River.
And all you have to do is look around this town and see where the biggest buzz is, and it's all up and down the river. My dad was quoted back in the mid-70s as saying, someday the best place to work, live, and play will be along the South Platte River in Denver, and he was dismissed as a lunatic.
By the looks of all the people playing in the river today, Joe Shoemaker's crazy notion is a dream coming true.
Is the river healthier today? Significantly so. Are there fish in the river? Yes. Are there trout in the river? To a limited basis? Yes. Is it healthier for birds and for mammals? Yes. Is the river clean enough? No. Not close to being clean enough. Can it be better? Yes.
And for that reason, Jeff and the Greenway Foundation are hard at work helping to improve water quality and also by promoting events like the one today that reconnect Denver residents to the river that gave the city its start.
I'm asked all the time when we're done. Jeff, you've been at this 35 years, your foundation for 42, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we're asked that all the time. And as I'm doing now, we laugh. There's no done. There's no done at the zoo. There's no done at the art museum. There's no done at the library. There's no done at the symphony. There's no done. And what was polluted for hundreds of years is just finally getting back to where It can be and it should be. My point is, it takes a lot longer to clean up a river than it does to destroy a river. Wouldn't it be great someday for there not to be a need for a Greenway Foundation? And that day ain't going to happen in my lifetime and probably never will, but we go after it every day, man.
This story is the first in our series on the South Platte River. To see pictures of the Great Flood of 1965, visit our website at h2oradio.org. Reporting from downtown Denver, I'm Franny Halperin.
And I'm Jamie Sudler, and you're listening to H2O Radio.